Accession number 27188, Reel 2.
Hammer, Reel 2. I was asking you if any of the soldiers who went had any doubts about whether they were doing the right thing in going to Bosnia.
In Bosnia, it was a very difficult situation in 95. And just 1 week before I came there, to Tuzla, one Norwegian soldier sergeant was killed in a shelling attack. So the funeral was in fact the same day when I was going there. So I think a lot of soldiers, like officers, really had to think about where they were going. But still, I don't think there was so much doubt from any of them.
Did any of them express any doubts to you before you went? Did any of them say that they were not sure about what they were doing?
No, because they were doing this willingly, so they were eager to go.
What was the situation when you got there? Was it as you had expected? Or did it differ from what you had expected when you arrived?
It's very hard to say. Of course, it's a lot of new things that it's impossible to prepare for. But the situation, I guess, was at that point quite in what I thought it should be.
What were the new things that you couldn't prepare for?
I didn't know so much about the era before. Of course, I had read something before I went on, but to see it, all these destroyed villages, especially to see how the villages was destroyed. Like we could pass a town with almost nothing destroyed in the first place, but when they rounded the corner, everything was completely destroyed. So it was so obvious, like if the town was kind of Croatian, all the Muslims and Serbian houses was away, and the same time situation in the Serbian or Muslims area. That was a surprise.
Was it a shock as well as a surprise?
I've heard so much about that before, so I guess not, but anyway, it was strange.
What sort of effect did this sort of thing have on the attitude of the soldiers?
It could, of course, be that they didn't trust the local population, or the local population had a lower moral standard than they had themselves. But for most of them, I think they understood the situation, because they had some. It was possible to have connection with local population in Tuzla and other places, so but of course it really had an effect, especially the persons who had been experienced some of these things. just some months before, after this Srebrenica tragedy. The logistic battalion did a lot of work with setting up tents in Tuzla Air Base for housing refugees from Srebrenica. So it was a lot of... the problem were very close.
Was it part of your work to get in touch with the local religious leaders?
Yes, that was a part of my task. And I was visiting leaders in Tuzla from all sides. I was visiting with the former chaplain, one mullah just outside the camp. And I could just observe the difference between him and some younger mullah that we were visiting also. That the older mullahs were more calm, not so more in a normal situation, but the younger mullahs were more political occupied. It was a very big difference between the new, more newcomers and the old mullahs.
Do you have any idea of why that was, what the reason was for that difference?
I think the new ones was much more influenced from Islamism and because I have been studied abroad, almost all of them, in the different countries in the Middle East.
Do you think they had been radicalized by that?
Yes, of course.
Did that affect your dealings with them, your relations with them?
Yes, in a way that my experience from Bosnia at all was that if the mullahs, anyway on a higher level, should talk with some others, they needed a kind of political accept for that. Or some of them also were, in my experience, also a part of the political system. This Orthodox Serbian priest had to go from Tuzla because he was expressing too much nationalistic ideas anyway from the people who lived there. So he was away.
What, he had to leave the town?
Yes, he had to leave the town.
Was he threatened? Was it for his own safety that he had to leave the town?
I think maybe he was threatened. This was, but still he also was coming with some expression that it was very hard for him to still to be there. The Catholic or Croatian minister were still there, and we also had serving mass together with them during the Christmas in 95.
What were your dealings like with them? Were they reasonable people to deal with?
I think all of them were reasonable people, but of course they had different experiences, and it was very hard for very difficult to be Orthodox Serbs in Tuzla at that moment, even if they were very moderate. So I was talking to some of them, and it was really almost impossible to be there.
What did the soldiers in the logistic battalion make of this religious conflict? Did they understand it? Did they take an interest in it?
Yes, I think they were quite occupied with that, and we were discussing that a lot. But most of their occupation was, of course, the normal duty that they had. But of course, a lot of these people were lorry drivers, and they're having their base in the, in Croatia, and dealing with checkpoints, roads. They were not allowed to drive. A lot of these things. It was very hard for them to understand, because they couldn't use power like the NATO did afterwards.
What sort of impact did it have on them? Did they become demoralized and depressed, or did they become more determined to
I think both.
The difficulties?
I think both. They were really wanting to do other jobs, but of course it was a lot of hardships on there sometimes, just to come through.
Yes. Were there any serious incidents while you were in Tuzla?
Well, the most serious incident was, of course, 1 week before I arrived.
Yes.
But still, we were discussing these things also afterwards. So, no, I don't think in that this month it was not any serious accident.
You were dealing with the local clergy, Muslim, Orthodox, and Roman Catholic. What about welfare questions when you were in Tuzla? Did you have a lot of difficulties with soldiers being away from home?
I think most of these persons was prepared for that. And there were, of course, things that there were accidents back in Norway. We had to send them home for some period because and a lot of this in these things, but the soldiers were very good, motivated for their jobs.
And the motivation kept up?
Yes, I think so.
Did they develop any sort of real social contact with the local population as the time went on?
Some of them did that. In Tuzla it was possible at that time. Of course, also with the local persons working in the military, like in the camp. But also to go out in Tuzla, that was possible.
You could go out off duty.
Yes, still, yes, it was possible to have trips anyway. Or we could also have some small kind of welfare trips around Tuzla, but not so very far away. It was not possible without this trips we had to make because of our mission, but it was not so easy because of it was very hard to get along than it was in the UN period.
Did you have any contacts with the local military leaders, the leaders of the local militia forces?
I didn't have that. But I know that officers on a higher level did have that.
What were the living conditions like in Tuzla?
Well, it was in the end of a war, but still course, there was a lot of gypsies and persons not having especially things, but still, I think it was okay with food and health.
And what about the conditions of life for the logistic battalion? What sort of place were you living in, and what conditions did you have?
We were staying at Tuzla Air Base. In the most of us in living in the containers, so that was kind of a big camp. So it was a lot of possibilities.
And you mentioned that people could go out on welfare trips. What other sort of facilities were there for recreation to keep soldiers happy and occupied when they weren't working?
Mostly inside the camp. Kind of training facilities. And welfare facilities. Outside, it was mostly kind of walking around, maybe also visiting some of the people.
How often did you hold services?
Every week.
Were they well attended?
Yes, most of them was.
Do you think you had more people attending than you would have done if you'd been giving a service in Norway?
In the military, yes, for sure.
Do you think that the experience of seeing the condition of Tuzla raised their sense of ethical consciousness?
I hope so, but anyway, it is a bit special to stay together like we do in the camp, and also to have experienced like one of the soldiers were comrades were dying and things like that. So and of course they did know the chaplains better at that moment than maybe in Norway.
It's a better environment for you being in the field.
In many ways, yes.
More opportunity.
Yes, it is for sure. Because we have to be there, to stay there all day and night.
Now, some people said that UNPROFOR was actually not doing anything really useful. It was simply keeping isolated communities alive so they could be massacred later by their enemies, and that, you know, it was very often impossible to get convoys through and so forth. Did you find that any of the people in the logistic battalion began to lose confidence in what they were doing? Because, you know, it might be easy to lapse into despair in such circumstances.
Of course, it was a lot of people losing confidence to the UN system.
Yes.
That's for sure. And a kind of picture for me, it was like before the NATO came in December 1995, and I was observing it very closely. The UN had to kind of apply for every, and to ask the local kind of government for every tree they should cut down at the area, yes, at the Tuzla Air Base. But when the NATO and the American leadership were coming, they were throwing away and they were cutting down on everything they wanted immediately. So it was kind of it was a very, very big change in attitude. And I have to say, I think it was necessary. Because, but still, I think the UN did a lot of good things, because I think they were saving a lot of human lives, for sure.
Well, the criticism of the UN, people said the UN meant well, but they were not effective, so they could have saved more lives if they used the same kind of methods as IFOR did. Yes,
I think that is right. But then you should blame the nations, because the UN were asking for more people and more possibilities, but they didn't get one.
Well, I mean, it's a question, isn't it, of rules of engagement and procedures followed, and the UN doesn't seem to have been able to adopt robust rules of engagement and procedure. It was too consensual.
Of course, it is a big difference. You can say one of these things. For instance, the Danish company was attacked from shelling.
Yes.
And I guess that was in 94 or something like that. And they decided to shoot back. And they did. But they didn't like that back in the Danish government, so they didn't allow to do that more. That was kind of the UN formula to do things. But still, I think that if they would have more capacity, more people on the ground, more support from the European, especially governments, it should be possible to do what they should do in Bosnia. But like I mentioned before, it was very frustrating for convoys to have to stop the checkpoints everywhere because some local bandits or whatever was wanting to earn some money. And that was, of course, they shouldn't be allowed to have these kinds of things. So in that case, NATO was much better.
Were you still at Tuzla when NATO moved in, or had you moved to Modrica?
No, I was still there. We moved in the beginning of January. And
what was the situation in Modrica? What were you doing there?
Well, I guess we was the first unit moving to the Serb Republic after the Dayton Agreement. And I guess I remember we had to pass a lot of roads with mines, so we had to be aware of that. Because of this line, this border. But coming to Modric, I was very quiet. That was a surprise. It was functioning very well.
Was there any devastation or damage in Modrica?
Yes, it was. The situation in the Serb Republic was much worse, like in lack of food and health, than in Tuzla or in the Federation. And I think almost, like I heard, I think almost more than 90% of all international help was going to the Federation side, and that was clear to see. It was just like I remember in Modrica, just two international or these non-governmental organizations working there, one Swedish and one Norwegian, or of course Red Cross and these things, but it was done very little.
Why was that?
Because mainly because the international society didn't want to support the Serb Republic in the same way. Or of course it also had been harder because they were not so welcome maybe in that part before.
One difficulty with dealing with this sort of mission is that soldiers can often be drawn to favour one side or another. In this war, you really had three sides, didn't you? The Serbs, the Bosnian Muslims, and the Croatians. Mm. did you find that soldiers in the battalion were drawn to one side or another?
In some way, of course, but in Norway we have some research from that, from Lebanon and Bosnia and Kosovo.
Yes.
And in Lebanon it was very clearly that the soldiers, after coming there, were favoring the Palestinian, because they were... But before they came, it was Israel. So that was a big change. The same you can see in Kosovo. But it changed from the Kosovo-Albanian side to the Serb side. But in Bosnia, it's not so obvious. Because... I guess maybe because we came to a Serb town, some of them have to change maybe to be more Serb friendly, but I think it was much easier in Bosnia to be neutral than in, for instance, Kosovo.
Why should it have been easier in Bosnia to be neutral than in Kosovo?
Because it was so easy to see that damages were being done by all sides. It was okay, and they are much more similar in background than, for instance, in Kosovo and also in the Middle East. So what I experienced from Tuzla and everywhere, that all young people, they just wanted one thing: to come closer to Europe. And even if they were Muslims or Serb or Croatians, whatever.
Were they willing to compromise with the other communities in order to get closer to Europe?
They were talking together with each other very easily, I guess. And like... the responsible authorities in Modrica said when they were dealing with this neighboring Muslim city, the kind of water and electricity supplies, they said, oh, okay, it's no problem to cooperate, but we wanted to have them like neighbors, not stay together with them. So they were cooperating, even during the war.
So they wanted to cooperate, but they didn't want to live together.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a very peculiar...
I don't think it's possible in Norway to do that if you were in conflict with, for instance, Sweden. But they were still importing beer from Croatia and Slovenia and whatever. Looks like it didn't matter anyway.
If the young people were happy to coexist and wanted to become closer to Europe, who were the real sources of the conflict? Promoting the
inter-ethnic
conflict.
I think they were afraid on all sides, even the young ones, because of what they had experienced, what they had been told, what they had been seen. So they were not trusting each other at all, that's for sure. Even if person they know, maybe they could trust, but. And especially not political leaders. They were not trusted at all.
Did you meet any of the political leaders in Modrica?
Yes, I met all the in Modrica. I met all of them. Mm. Also because we didn't have our own area of responsibility. It was an American battalion, because we were the logistic element in this.
You were there to support the American?
Not the American. We should support the Nordic Brigade, Nordic Polish Brigade in Doboj. But we were having, I don't know why, but we were situated in the area that the American battalion had. And so we had a lot